Thank you so much for tuning in to the Kathy Lee Parker Show. Right here with me today, I have Daniel Blanchard. He's going to be talking about how we can do to help our youth to stay positive and upbeat. Thank you so much, Daniel, for coming on my show.
Oh, this is great, Kathy Lee. I appreciate it, and I'm really happy to be on the show, and I'm looking forward to spending some time talking with your guest and your audience.
Yes, and or let them hear what you have to say. You know, Daniel, you've been doing this for quite a while. You have a book on, you know, that you help young people become good people. I like that topic. Mm-hmm. And and there's a lot of issues out there relating to kids staying positive and happy. You know, I mean, I know the parents today, it takes two people nowadays to work. Only used to be many years ago when you and I were young, where our mom stayed home all the time. And, you know, you come home from school and mom's there waiting for you. Nowadays, kids come home and there's nobody there, you know. And, or, you know, a note saying, you know, dinner's in the microwave or whatever, refrigerator, and pull it out. But we need some good advice and help the young people become good people, you know. And tell me about your book. First of all, let's start with your book.
All right, great. Let me back up to like the genesis of my book, and this is an interesting story. And if I, you know, if I went back like 20 years, I would have never thought, Kathleen, that I'd be where I am today. Because I always felt like I wasn't a very good writer, which is actually true. I wasn't a very good writer. And then what happened was that my students, probably back around, gosh, well, it must have been around year 2000, my students, I'm an inner city school teacher, you know, a lot of trouble challenging kids there. But my students started telling me back in around 2000, you know, they'd approach me and say, "Hey, mister." No, they always said mister. They never call you by your last name. That's just kind of how it works out in the inner city. But they'd say, "Hey, mister, you're the most inspirational teacher I've ever had. You should tell other people what you tell us. But like write a book. You should write a book, mister." And I would always go, "Oh, thank you. Thank you. That's so sweet." But then under my breath, I'd be like, "Oh, my gosh, that kid's so naive." I'm like, "I can't write a book. There's no way I could write a book. I'm a terrible writer. I wouldn't know what to say. You know, guys like me don't write books. You know, maybe some other people do, but guys like me don't really write books." So this started like in 2000, right around then. I'd say probably that first year, I probably had maybe two or three different kids throughout the school year come up and say pretty much that same sort of thing of, "Hey, mister, you're the most inspirational teacher I've ever had in my life. You should write a book and tell other kids what you tell us." You know, and it was always the same thing, you know, like, "Thanks," but like, kind of like, "No thanks." Right. So this went on probably several years. It was going on. And at some point, I'm like, "Okay, what's going on here? Something's going on here. I don't know what it is." But there's like no way I'm writing a book, but maybe I should look it up. So just for ha-has, maybe about 5 years in of getting these comments every year from multiple students in different classes, I just looked it up, and I was like, "Yeah, what does it look like to write a book, to get published?" And I'm like, and I found out that it was really, really hard to get published, super hard to get like an agent, a publisher, all that stuff, really hard to get. And then the publisher, you know, pretty much takes all the money anyways. The authors only get paid a very, very small amount of it. So I'm like, "Yeah, no, it's not for me. I'm not going to do this," right? So then what happens is it continues, you know, over the another 5 years or so of kids saying the same thing. And it seems like each year it's becoming more frequent. You know, instead of maybe like two or three times a year, it's working its way to four, five, six times a year of kids coming up to me and just saying, "Hey, mister, you're the most inspirational teacher I've ever had in my life. You should write a book and tell other kids what you tell us." You know, and I kept patting them, well, basically almost patting them on the head and saying, "Thanks, but no thanks." You know, again, right? But then, Kathy Lee, something crazy happened. You know, probably around the 10-year mark, I really started wondering. I'm like, "What are the kids seeing, you know, in me that I'm not seeing in me?" And I'm driving home one day, and my buddy Dave who I grew up with, who in Connecticut, who moved to Florida. He calls me and he says, hey, Dan, guess what? I'm going to write a book. And I was like, oh, Dave, that's awesome. Good for you. You should definitely write a book. You're a super smart guy. People listen to you. You should definitely write a book. And I'm thinking, I pulled the phone away from my head, and I'm thinking, yeah, well, you know, guys like Dave are the guys that write books, not guys like me, right? So, you know, I get back on. I'm encouraging Dave, write that book, write that book. And then I tell him, I said, hey, Dave, you're not going to believe this. But today, one of my students kind of pretty much told me the same thing, told me that I should write a book. And then Dave goes, Dan, you should. I was like, what? What? Excuse me? I was like, whoa. Like, what's going on here? I mean, my buddy Dave, he's the guy that kind of almost everything he touches turns to gold. He's successful in, like, everything that he does. And now he's not some naive inner city kid telling me to write a book. He's a guy that's pretty squared away and pretty smart telling me I should write a book. So I've got the hour drive home. I probably got about 30 minutes left in that drive home, and I'm thinking about it and thinking about it and thinking about it. And then I was like, I don't know when I'd even have time to write a book. Where would I put it in? I'm like, I'm already getting up at 5 in the morning, going to the gym. Then right from the gym, I'm going straight to work, teaching all day, coaching sports, going to grad school at night. Like, I don't know where I could fit this. And then it hits me, Natalie. Right. If you want different results, you got to do different things. Okay. So I said, well, what if I got up at 4? So that night, I set my alarm clock for 4 a.m. And I thought I would get up and try to do some writing and just see how it goes. I'd write a inspirational, motivational book for teenagers based on leadership, you know, a teen leadership book. Uh-huh. And I got up and I wrote the next morning at 4 a.m. to 5 a.m. And then I started my normal day schedule, going to the gym and everything else. And then I did it the next day and the next day and the next day. And then before I know it, a whole year goes by.
Oh, no.
A whole year goes by. Uh-huh. And I've done this 7 days a week, every single day. And I'm holding like this really good, I thought it was really good, really good manuscript in my hand. And I was just like, oh, okay. So I couldn't believe it, right? I had a few people read it. They liked it again. I was like, oh, you know, kind of hard for me to believe it's really, really good. Uh-huh. And I had a few more people read it, and they're like, it's good. So I said, all right, good. Now, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to put it in the bottom drawer of my teacher's desk. So the next time a kid comes up to me and says, hey, mister, you know, you're the most inspirational teacher I've ever had in my life. You really should write a book so you can tell other kids what you tell us. I'm going to open up my bottom drawer of my teacher's desk, pull out that manuscript, and give it to this particular kid. And I would have known that I would have helped at least one kid. And that would be good. That would be a victory to know that I helped at least one person. And then the second thing, I thought, you know what? There's a benefit here. The second thing is, not only am I going to help at least one kid, but this whole thing was like an intellectual exercise, which somehow improved me. Maybe I don't know how it improved me. Maybe I couldn't articulate it, but I know that it somehow improved me. And it was in the process of trying to help out a kid. And once a kid grabs it, I guess I suppose I could run off another copy to help another kid and another kid later down the road. Maybe some of them wouldn't read it, but some of them would. And again, if it helped even just one kid, and I figured I did good, right? So now, some time has passed, right? And I'm thinking about it. I'm thinking about how I always tell my kids to swing for the fence. You know, my own kids, my students, swing for the fence. And I'm thinking, what am I going to tell my students when they ask me, you know, when they read that manuscript and they go, hey, this is pretty good. And then they ask me and they say, hey, did you swing for the fence and send this to a publisher? What am I going to say? So I'm like, I want to be able to say yes. Okay. So here's the deal in my head. I'm going to swing for the fences because it's what I would ask my students and today's youth to do, to swing for the fences, mm-hmm. right? To have a large, audacious goal, swing for the fences and see what happens. Okay. So I'm going to swing for the fences because I have to be that good role model. Right? So I swing for the fences And I send this manuscript out to a couple of publishers, knowing they're never going to even look at it. It's going to end up in the trash. I'll never hear from them. But at least I can tell the youth that I swung for the fences, right? Absolutely. Right. So now, 7 months go by, and I come home from work one day, and my wife's like, you got to see what came in the mail today. And I look at it, and it was a letter from a publisher saying, we like your manuscript, and we want to publish it.
Wow.
I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it, right? And within a very short time, I was holding my first book, the physical copy of my first book, in my hand, going, I cannot believe that this happened. I cannot believe that this worked.
Daniel.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, I always had a good work ethic, but I never thought this would happen.
Daniel, isn't it?
And the reason it happened is because of my students.
Wow.
My students encouraged me.
Daniel, isn't it a good feeling to knowing that you'd written a book and it's in your hand? There's nothing more exciting to knowing that something you've written is in a book and it's by you.
Yeah. Yes. And I remember there was a guy I used to coach wrestling, because I was a high school wrestling coach,
okay.
Football coach, etc. Uh-huh. One of the wrestling coaches, he actually had the book in his hand one day when he approached me.
Wow.
And he said, Dan, he goes, do you know what you did here? And he's smiling ear to ear, saying, I can't believe you wrote a book, but do you know what you did here? And I go, yeah, I wrote a book. And I go, hopefully it helps a few people. And he goes, and? I'm like, and what? He goes, and you have just created a legacy for yourself. He goes, this book could be many places that you can't be, and it can be around long after you're gone. He's like, you just created a legacy for yourself. And again, I was like, well, all I was trying to do was just help a kid. So all I was really trying to do is just help a kid. And, you know, some really good things came out of it. So, Kathleen, you know what I did?
What?
I set my alarm clock for 4 a.m. the next morning and said, let's see if I can write the sequel.
And,
you know, with the same habits,
uh-huh.
The same success habits, get up early, work hard, don't waste time, make the best use of your time, make sure you do some work every single day, that you don't coast, you don't take days off. You know, you work hard, all those success habits. And a year later, I had the sequel to the book. The book itself, the original book was called The Storm, right? But the sequel was called The Sprint to the Top. And there it was. I was holding the other one in my hand. And not only was I holding it in my hand, but now every single day when I'm in front of my inner city classroom, mm-hmm. and I'm talking to these kids about habits of success, I've got something to back it up. And it carries a little weight, because now the kids, they begin to see me as more than like just another teacher. You know, they're like, oh my gosh, my teacher's a published author. And you know, that carries a little bit of weight with the students. And when they ask me how I got there, and I tell them about the success habits of hard work, mm-hmm. you know, you have to work hard. People just don't give you things.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? You got to earn things, which sadly, Too many youth today, you know, feel that like Easter Bunny's coming or something, for real, right? Like they're just going to be giving stuff without working for it. So as I'm up there preaching about working hard, you know, my comments always seem to carry a little bit of weight with my students, but now they're carrying even more weight because I'm like a published author. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And then it evolves. It evolves into like radio interviews, TV interviews, podcasts, you know, blogs, other books, TV shows, uh-huh. Speeches up on stages. So it's been one heck of a ride that started all off from my students inspiring me, I guess like I inspired them, you know, the work ethic, obviously, and probably the most important thing is me saying in my head, I got to try to help at least one kid. You know, if one kid reads this manuscript and it helps them, I have done good. You know, and obviously I should probably throw in also about swinging for the fences, because you know, I have to be that model. If I don't swing for the fences, how can I keep telling my students to swing for the fences? So swing for the fences. Think of big, big goals and work really hard toward those big goals. And you see, you start becoming like a leader. And when you start becoming a leader, you know, you don't do that petty stuff, like pick on people. I mean, that's one of the things that we see today with our youth a lot, is that the youth are picking on each other, or they're bullying each other, or they're cyber bullying, you know, each other, you know, or they're standing by and watching and doing nothing with one of their classmates is being ostracized or picked on or snickered about, you know what I'm saying? When they start getting those habits of you know, feeling good about themselves, feeling good about what their hard work brings them, and they start getting those success habits and those leadership skills and attitudes, you know, they become a better person. And they don't stick back. They don't sit back and or getting, you know, when people are being picked on or get involved
right
in that petty stuff.
Can I,
you know, they don't do it.
Ask a question. I think it's good for, you know, your book, The Seven Habits. You know what I mean? I think it's good for athlete, like the young kid who wants to be a really good baseball player, or the basketball player, mm-hmm. the football player.
Absolutely.
They don't realize it takes work, takes getting up early in the morning. It takes, you know, to become successful. Sometimes it takes get up early in the morning to practice that throwing the ball or basketball. You know what I mean? Even though nobody else is around, but you have to practice. And that makes you a better.
You do. You do. And I always tell kids, now my first book was The Storm, and my second book was The Sprint to the Top.
Uh-huh.
And Stephen Covey,
yes.
who's, you know, he's got the seven habits of highly successful people. And his son, he's got his son, Sean Covey, who's got the habits of seven habits of highly successful teenagers. He's endorsed my books.
Wonderful.
Of, you know, The Storm and, you know, so it's so cool having somebody of his caliber, you know, recognizing my book and saying, yes, this is a great book. And, you know, people should look at this book and you know, become familiar with it. So it was really cool to have him from The Seven Habits involved in endorsing my book and writing a written endorsement.
Really?
But I've always told Kathy Lee, I said, listen,
okay.
I go, here's the thing. I didn't start this way off. I mean, I'm 54 years old now, and I didn't start off this way when I was a kid, when I was a teenager. You know, I came from a very dysfunctional home, and I couldn't do much right. You know what I'm saying? So when kids look at me and they say, well, yeah, but I'm me and you're you, you know, and they're kind of looking at me like I've had some kind of advantages and you know, like I wouldn't understand them. That is a million miles from the truth. I totally, totally understand today's youth. I was today's youth struggling beyond belief, you know, living in a very dysfunctional, disruptive home. And I couldn't do much. I couldn't do much at all. I wasn't good at much at all. But I got to tell you, I found one thing.
What?
I found one thing, and I ran with that. And that's what I tell the kids. I say, listen, just find one thing. Find one thing that you're willing to work hard at. You know, for me, it was sports, right? But you find that one thing you're willing to work hard at, and then that is where you develop your success skills.
Right.
Your success habits, you know, that one thing. It's all you got to do. Just one thing. Find it. Find something you like. And then work hard at that one thing and develop those skills and that knowledge and those habits. And then you got something. You got something to work with. And then from there, what you can do is you can transfer over those habits, those success skills. Even some of that knowledge can be transferred over to other realms. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, let's say, you know, for instance, for me, it was, you know, lifting weights and sports, you know, football, wrestling. And as I was kind of going through that, and I wasn't good at anything else, right? Anything else. but what happened was, you know, after high school, I went to the Army. And you can say in your head, I was Army infantry. Foot soldier, front line. And I suppose you could say, well, you know, that was a reasonable jump, you know, to go from a football player, weightlifter, wrestler into the trenches of the Army. It wasn't too big of a jump. It was a logical, reasonable jump. It was very physical. and stuff like that. But it was different. It was a little bit different. It was a little bit of a different realm. You know what I'm saying? So, but what I did was the same thing. When the drill sergeants had us getting up early, I'm like, God, this is nothing. I'm used to getting up early, right? When they had us working hard, I'm like, this is nothing. I'm used to working hard. You know what I'm saying? So a lot of those success skills and those habits, you just kind of transfer it over to the next arena in your life. Mm-hmm. For me, after I graduated high school as a total a C student, you know, just enough to get by, it was the Army. You know, can I be successful in the Army? Can I be a good young man in the Army? And the answer was yes. I could be a good young man in the Army. I could be successful in the Army. Uh-huh. Because I had taken the time in high school to develop certain success habits.
Right.
You know, a certain work ethic. Uh-huh. You know, and that just transferred over to the Army. And I got to tell you, after that, I've used that in every single realm. You know, and I become a little bit more of a complete individual with the Army. You know, then it was college. And I was like, oh my gosh, how am I going to do college? You know, college is like beyond me. I was a C student in high school, barely. I'm like, how am I going to do college? And I'm like, well, wait a minute. I succeeded at, you know, the weightlifting, the football, the wrestling, and the Army. You know, what if I just took that stuff and, you know, and I've even developed even more, obviously, in the Army. What if I took that stuff and tried to go to a place that I've never been comfortable, such as the classroom? What if I tried to use those same success skills, work habits, you know, work ethic? Mm-hmm. What if I tried that in the classroom? You know, could I develop into a good, young, educated man? Is that possible that I could develop into a good, young, educated man? And I was like, let's see what happens. And it worked. I started getting all A's and B's, made the D's list. You know what I'm saying? And from just using those skills. Yeah. Now, if you'd asked me like 5 years earlier, uh-huh, if I could go to college and get all A's and B's, many years, straight A's, make the dean's list, you know, be a good, young, educated man, I probably would have said, it's probably not in the cards for me. I know how to wrestle, but I don't know how to do that. You know what I'm saying?
Wait,
I developed.
Daniel, since you were talking about all this stuff, what would you say to a parent who has a child that's all over the place? You know, he can't seem to stay focus. He's, you know what I mean? He's, and she knows he's smart. She knows he's got some intelligence there, but he just will not stay into football.
Yeah.
Well, he will not stay
I tell you, Dr. Dweck, Carolyn Dweck, wrote a book called Grit. That's fabulous. Talks about this. And one of the things that she talks about, which I couldn't agree more with, because I've been a coach in many, many different athletics and extracurriculars, it's one of the best things, you know, a kid can do. Wow. It's one of the best things that parents can do for a kid is to try to direct them or steer them into extracurriculars. And it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if it's the chess club, the theater, the wrestling mat, the basketball court. It doesn't matter what it is. But here it is. Some kids are unwilling, especially, let's say, my inner city students. They're unwilling to work really hard in the classroom. You know what I'm saying? Because for some of them, they don't want to, like, show off. Or some of them have friends that say school's uncool, whatever. But extracurriculars is a totally different place. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? If a kid goes to the theater, or a kid goes to the basketball court, or the chess club, or the wrestling mat, they're going to hopefully be in an area where nobody's telling them that they have to be there, like a classroom. Mm-hmm. They're going to be in a place where they want to be. And that's huge. That's a really big difference, mm-hmm, for the kid to be in a place where they want to be. You know, that could be their one thing. Mm-hmm. Their one big thing. For me, like, it was the wrestling mat was my one big thing. You know, and then, of course, weightlifting and football got in there also. But, whatever, the theater, whatever it is, that could be their one, the debate team, that could be their one big thing. And then from there, You know, they don't have someone telling them they got to be there. They're there because they want to be there, right? The second thing is, it may be the first time in their lives that they really find a place that they enjoy doing really hard things. You know, when I got my son out there shoveling 2 feet of snow, it's hard and he doesn't like it. You know what I'm saying? But if I got him in an extracurricular activity, right, and he's really working hard to excel in that extracurricular activity, whatever it may be the first time in my son's life or my student's life or any one of our youth's lives that they are actually in a place where they want to work hard because they're really seeing the improvements and they're around like-minded people who have become their friends. I mean, that's a big, big thing. You know, when you're around friends that are doing hard things and encouraging you to do hard things, that's an environment that for most of today's youth does not exist in the classroom, does not exist at home. This is a very unique place, extracurriculars. You know, they are making friends, around friends, having fun, doing something that's really, really hard, and they're getting better at it. And the more they improve, the more they want to work harder. You know, it's like it's a cycle that just feeds itself. And the kids, you know, that are around them are their friends. And then they're rooting their friends on, and their friends are rooting them on, you know, whether it's the chess club or whatever it is. And it's such a special place, Daniel. You know, that to stop being scattered all over the place and to build some grit. Okay. Angela said, Angela Duckworth talked a lot about it in her book. And it's just, you know, I was in there when I was a youth. And when I was older, I was the guy that was the coach or the club leader. And multiple clubs, and I can't say enough about extracurricular activities.
Okay, I guess something
that's
else.
That's where
ask
the kids want to go.
Okay, I guess something else. Go to for ask it. You. I have a friend who, he's very wealthy, and his kids could do anything. But the point is he's got this boy. I'm not kidding you. He started off with one sport. He did very well. Mm-hmm. I mean, he did extremely well. Now he's 13, and now he's into another. But the point is, I noticed that one activity made the other activity even more better. I mean, I can't believe he's in skiing, and he's doing these jumps and all kinds of stuff. And I'm like, he surprised his dad, and his dad's like, oh my gosh, you can do this. When were you doing this? So he started asking, you know, but he's really super good. And I see him becoming a very, very good athlete. He just has to pick which one he's good at, that he really wants to thrive at. And because there's some kids that are born with so much talent that they just have to pick the one that they really want to thrive. And I saw that this year, and I'm thinking, oh my gosh, a future athlete or Olympian in skiing. I mean, he's 13 years old, and he was doing jumps, and I'm like,
amazing.
But he got those jumps from this other sport that he did that built his muscles, and he was fearless, and you know, and all this other stuff. And it made him even, now the kid's really a good kid, and and if parents can see that one sport helps the other sport, and then
it sure does.
It's like with you did the wrestling and then football and then all this other stuff. It helps with one after another. But then I also see too, Daniel, that it helps the child to become a better, you know, even though they were C average, you know, they barely made it. You know? But the point is I can see them become even better. Like you went to college, you built up these habits in sports that made you want to study more. Do you know what I mean? You was like not
absolutely.
You were hungry.
Yeah, you developed the work ethic.
Right, and you know, don't. I'm trying to tell parents, please don't. You know, if the child's getting to C's, you know, maybe a D here, but he's getting C's, don't give up. You know, get them in sports or some activity, like you said, to keep them focused.
Absolutely. And success begets success.
Right.
You know, when you finally, for the first time in your life, start having some success in this one thing.
Right.
It encourages you. to try to have success in another thing. You know, why also at the same time, of course, trying to have even more success in that one thing. I'm saying, so I totally agree with you, Kathy Lee. And the other thing that's very, very unique to like these extracurriculars and picking one thing to have success and then, you know, eventually maybe transferring over to something else is that for the kids, let's say, don't get a chance to do this, to be in this unique realm of finding this one thing, let's say in extracurriculars, and finding this one thing where it's safe to fail. You'll say where it's safe to work really hard and fail and learn. You're saying those kids that do this are at such an advantage for when they move out of their parents' homes, you know, because, you know, they were in a place, whether it was in a football field or wherever it was, they were in a place doing one thing, working really, really hard and having, you know, ups and downs and failing and picking themselves back up. Right. And it was an area that was safe where they weren't really going to get hurt. But then they go out in the real world, you know, and they kind of know what to do. The pattern's familiar to them. But you get the other kids who've never done this. They might go out in the real world, you know what I'm saying? And they didn't go through those extracurriculars or that one thing. And you get the kids that go out in the real world, and it might not be safe, something that they're doing. Whatever it is, they may find themselves without a job, find themselves with no way to support their family.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? They may find themselves getting hurt somehow because they've never had this opportunity to develop this one thing and be in this unique circumstances, you know, where you work really hard. You work really, really hard in extracurricular activities, and you want to. You know what I'm saying? And the other side of that coin is, you get these kids that are just going through the regular school system that are not involved. They may, once they get out of school, they may not know how to work hard. They may like avoid things because they don't want to fail. They may not try. They may make excuses saying, oh, well, that looks dumb. Whoever does that's dumb. You know what I'm saying? And in the meantime, in the back of their head, they're like, oh, I wish I could do that, but I'm too afraid, you know, to even try. Why not? So they're like handicapping themselves for the rest of their lives, and then they walk around as a bad attitude as young adults, you know, just out of their teens. They walk around this bad attitude, and then like this jealousy sort of thing, you know, where they make fun of people who try, and they look for somebody failing. Oh, he dropped the ball, right? Oh, he got fired from his job, and oh, that song stinks. He's got no voice. You know, whatever. And they find reasons to make fun of other people and put other people down in an attempt to make themselves feel good because they never really learned to do that one thing and get good at that one thing, you know, and then transfer that skills over to those work habits over to other places and feel good about themselves. I got to tell you, people who are doing this sort of thing and succeeding in life, they don't have time to be looking for the flaws in other people.
Right, they don't.
And if they happen to come across a flaw in another person, the last thing they're going to do is make fun of that person.
Right.
They're not going to do it because they're just a higher quality person. You know what I'm saying? They're not going to do it. I would say, you know, for our young kids that are out there today, if you find yourself being a bit sinister, if you find yourself making fun of other kids, if you find yourself looking for the negative, you know what I'm saying? You're on the wrong path. You need to find that one thing in life that interests you, where you are willing to work hard and become that good young person, that high quality person.
Daniel, I have something else to ask you. I have another question popped up. Somebody asked me, say that you have children that are not into sports or dance or anything like that, but you put your children through, what about chores? They have to do chores when they come home, or they have to get up early before school and do chores. But if they put their mind on doing these chores, do you think that would give them good habits too, to go out in the world, to become?
You know, not only am I an author and a speaker, but I'm also a high school teacher, and I'm a special ed teacher and a history teacher. Okay. So the history teacher jumped right on this question. Okay. Hey, our founders, you know, the founders of this country, you know, so many of them were the framers of the Constitution.
Right.
Our founders of this country were basically agrarian. You know, they were farmers.
Right.
They got up early. They worked hard. You know, they had on the farms.
Right.
They worked very hard from early, you know, as much as the daylight sunshine, the sun light was out there. They worked very hard, and they developed that habit of working very hard as farmers. You know, you could say it was on their chores, you know, whatever, but it was running their farms. You know, and then they transferred over those working very hard into being prolific readers.
Yes.
And self-educating themselves. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And they became good men. I mean, George Washington was a good man. You know what I'm saying? The founders of our, you know, Thomas Jefferson, Benjamin Franklin, a lot of these guys, maybe Franklin a little less, but a lot, he was in kind of like a lot of his life, he was in busy Philadelphia. But a lot of these guys are agrarian. They're farmers.
Right. That's
you know what I'm saying? So chores are good for you. You know what I'm saying? And, again, working hard. If you look out, a lot of this country has a lot of farmland. Mm-hmm. And there's a golden opportunity. You know, maybe there is nothing you're interested in. Or maybe there are no opportunities because you're from one of those small farm towns or whatever. But if farming or chores is the only thing you have, or it's necessary because your parents really, really need the help, mm-hmm. You know, you're involved in a bigger thing, the family unit. You're being a good young person mm-hmm. by being involved in the family unit and everybody pulling in the same direction by doing your chores, your farm work, or whatever it may be. So, yeah, Kathy, I would agree
okay.
that would be a good way to go.
I just
for
say
a lot of kids.
I say because there's a lot of kids.
Agree.
There's a lot of kids out there that are not sports minded. You know, some are always on the computer, but if they did chores. Mm-hmm. To focus off those computers sometimes. Not that it's bad, because some of these games that they play are very, very educational, you know, for
mm-hmm.
them and keep their mind focused and stuff like that. They also can be very successful if long as they break away from that to do chores, to do take out the trash for the mom, go mow the lawn, you know, girl go do babysitting, things like that. They build up a habit. Like you said
yeah.
in your book, you know, become good people, young people become
yep.
good people that
yep.
stay focused
well, on. I got to tell you, Kathleen,
okay.
like I got a really long driveway, a 640-foot driveway that's gravel. my house is deep in the woods. And when we get snow, it takes me 4.5 hours to shovel the driveway. Okay? And the days that I'm lucky enough to have my son around, you know, I'm like, hey, grab a shovel. Let's go. Help me out. And I'm out there shoveling that driveway. And you could imagine, no kid wants to be out there for hours shoveling a driveway.
Uh-huh.
You know, no kid wants to do that. But as my kid is out there and I could see him kind of grumbling a little bit, I could see him not really enjoying it. And he's looking over at me and I got a smile on my face. And he's like looking at me like I'm kind of weird. Like, what are you doing, Dad? How can you act like you're enjoying this? And I look at him and I go, hey. I go, this is fresh air and exercise. And I go, and not only is it fresh air, sunshine, perhaps, uh-huh. you know, depending, and exercise. I go, this shovel in the driveway, my son was also a wrestler. I go, this shovel in the driveway will make you a better wrestler. Now shovel harder and smile at the great opportunity you're getting. You know what I'm saying? It's
so
a great opportunity.
And you're spending
getting.
Time with me. She's like, you're spending time with me. What a great
yeah.
opportunity to spend time with me. I'm your dad. And I'm spending
exactly,
time with you.
Exactly. Spend time with me. We're working together as a family unit. And whether you know it or not, you know, working really, really hard, shoveling this driveway is going to make you better at wrestling somehow. It's going to make you better. You know what I'm saying? Somehow.
And
I go, and besides, today's kids don't get enough fresh air and exercise and even sunshine sometimes. I mean, they should be out there doing that.
What did he say when he told that? Did he grumble
more? Oh, he just looked at me like I was a little weird. You know what I'm saying? I don't expect him to get it.
Yet.
You know, sometimes to our youth out there,
uh-huh.
sometimes you just have to trust the process. You know what I'm saying? It was like when Mr. Miyagi had Danielson, the Karate Kid, with a wax on, wax off, wax on, wax off, paint the fence. You know, in Ralph Macchio, who's playing Danielson in the Karate Kid, he was like, why am I doing this? This is stupid. You haven't taught me a thing. And then Mr. Miyagi starts throwing some punches at him, and Daniel can totally block him without even thinking. And it was like, that's why. Sometimes you have to just trust the process that, you know, what the adults are doing, you know, there's a reason behind it. And somehow, to all the youth out there, somehow it's going to help. Even if you can't understand at this moment how it's going to help. It's like, my son couldn't understand at the moment. I'll show him the driveway. It's going to help him to be tougher and bigger and stronger and everything on the wrestling mat. And I'm just like, sometimes you just have to trust me. You just have to trust me. Just do what I say. You just got to trust me. There's a process here. Right, Danielson? Absolutely. So, yeah,
but
I totally agree with you.
I grumbled too when I was young. I had to do chores and stuff. Why do I have to do this? But, you know, I learned later in life. I'm grateful for it. You know what I mean? I'm grateful that I had to get up at, you know, 6:30 in the morning or 6 o'clock in the morning, do some chores before I got ready for school. It was weird stuff, you know, but I did it. I remember getting hit with on the leg, get up. And I'm like, okay. And I got up and I did the chores, but they were, you know, I really didn't have to do the chores, but I think my parents were trying to teach me something, you know, teach me responsibility. Mm-hmm. But I learned later in life, and I don't want to say grateful for it, but I'm glad I did it. Does that make sense?
Yeah. You look back and you realize it was a good thing.
Yeah.
Even though it didn't feel like a good thing at the moment. Oh, I got to tell you, Catherine, this just popped in my head.
What?
Over the last 20 years.
Okay.
I'm seeing more and more of this in schools, and it saddens me. Is I'm seeing kids who are just not sleeping enough at night. You know, whether their parents are not putting them to bed, or whether they're sneaking their phone, or sometimes even worse, when they're just not tired at night, and they come into school, and they're tired during the school, and they're practically worthless in school, and they're irritable in school, and they're not learning. Sometimes they're even putting their heads down, or they're trying to go to the nurse, you know, for whatever, and it's totally affected their education. And when I speak to them, I said, listen, and your chores things kind of is what started this whole thing. And I say to the kids, I go, listen, I go, when are you going to bed? And they're like, you know, like 2, 3. And I'm like, you should be exhausted from working hard during the day to the point where 9, 10 o'clock at night, you can't wait to put your head on the pillow.
Yeah, I remember.
And go, and then, and you're going to sleep because you're tired, because you worked hard during the day. But what's happening today is today's the adult generation is pretty much doing everything for the kids.
Right.
They're spoon feeding them everything. They're pampering them, and they're not making the kids work hard, and it's affecting their sleep. You know what I'm saying? And then they come in the next day, and they're miserable and practically useless in school. So I always tell my youth, my students, I say, hey, you're obviously not working hard enough during the day. You have to work hard during the day so that you're tired at night, you know? And that involves doing things like chores. It involves getting involved in things like extracurriculars. It involves giving school 100% of your attention and your effort. And stop looking for little ways to cop out or weasel out or try to put your head down or try to go to the nurse. You know, saying, or giving people an attitude and being irritable because they're asking you to work. You know, so you should be doing these things.
I know.
If you don't, if the youth doesn't do these things, then they're not tired at night. And they're staying awake half the night, most of the night. And it's just a vicious cycle. It's no good. It's no good to them, and it's doing the opposite. We want to help young people become good people, mm-hmm. but when they don't work hard during the day, you know, for a variety of reasons, and maybe no adults are making them, or they don't have the drive to do it themselves, mm-hmm. it's driving them in the opposite direction. In the opposite direction. So I always say to my students, and I'm going to say to the youth in the audience, if the adults in your life are not forcing you to work hard mm-hmm. during the day, then you need to force yourself to work hard during the day until it becomes a habit for you, a habit of working hard during the day, which, by the way, just happens to be one of the winning habits, you know, of becoming a good person and becoming successful. And then the many, many years that you're an adult, uh-huh. you know, you'll be a successful, happier adult. If you do these things when you're young. But if you don't do these things when you're young, you're going to spend a lot of years as an adult with an uphill climb. So I hope that, and I'm not trying to scare the youth too much, but here's the thing. Maybe you should be scared a little teeny bit about having that never-ending uphill climb when you're an adult, like 70 years. Mm-hmm. do it now. Do it now.
I notice.
Work hard now. Find that one thing. Start there uh-huh. and do it now.
Daniel, there's something that bothers me too. It's the phone. The kids,
yes.
I have a good friend. He went to check on his son. He checks on him every night. And he's got his head into the phone. And he
yep.
should be sleeping. But I go, what do you say to him? You know, take the phone away or get
yeah.
him to put it down. I mean, even if he's 16 or 15 years old, you're responsible for him having that phone.
Yes, yes.
So take
the,
it
the
away.
Sad thing is, I don't know, Kathy Lee, if you've seen this dynamic that I've seen.
What?
But I believe, like, our generations, we grew up, the adults expected a lot of us.
Right.
And they really, really pushed us.
Right.
And I think a lot of us grew up to be adults. And it was that whole dynamic of, well, I'm not going to make the mistakes that my parents made. I'm not going to push my kids so hard, you know. And then all that's really happening is that if you're not making the mistakes that your parents made with you, or at least the mistakes you felt they make, maybe they weren't mistakes at all once you get older and look back. But
right.
but going through it at the time, you know, the mistakes you felt your parents made. If you're not making those mistakes, then the chances are you're making a whole new set of other mistakes with your kids.
Right.
And one of them that I think I see going on with this generation of adults is, well, I'm not going to push my kids as hard as my parents pushed me. And what happens is a lot of this generation of adults are failing to be the parent. Instead, they're kind of acting like the buddy mm-hmm. of their kids.
Right.
And if their kids got the phone in the face at 10 o'clock at night when they're supposed to be in bed,
yeah,
the
sleep.
Buddy may say, hey, you know, you got to go to bed and just leave the room and do nothing. The parent would go over there and say, give me that phone. You know, you're not supposed to be on the phone. And the parent would be a parent.
Right.
Not a buddy.
Right.
And I feel like I'm seeing this generation of adults mm-hmm. is trying to be the buddy. They're pampering this generation. They're doing everything for this generation. They're spoon feeding this generation, and they're putting this generation on a pedestal above the adults, which is bad. Because
mm-hmm.
then who do the kids have to look up to if they're always looking down at the adults? Because they've been put up on a pedestal above the adults, as seen more important than the adults. You know, who do they look up to?
Right.
They got nobody to look up to. You know what I'm saying? This is just a slippery, slippery slope for today's youth.
They got TVs. They got TVs in their room. They got
uh-huh.
all kinds of stuff. You know, you and I, well, I'm a little bit older than you, but I grew up where, I never forget when I got my first telephone. I got a telephone with my own phone line, but I
mm-hmm.
had certain times I had to be off the phone. I remember my dad saying,
yeah.
get off the phone, Kathy. And I was kind of grumpy about
it.
But it's bedtime, yeah. Or,
yeah.
You know, shut the TV off, go to bed, you know, and
yep.
I had to shut the TV off and all this stuff. But now, kids, now they got they got the TV on. You don't know it, but they got the headsets on and they were listening to TV, and it goes on and on and on and on.
It's such a different world today.
And then what do you do with that? And then you feel like you're the mean parent by taking everything away, but you have to, if you sit them down and talk to them, say why I'm doing this and why, and it's for your benefit. And they, I know the teenagers say, well, my bad advice, because kids talk with kids. But the point is I remember something I grew up with, and one of my friends said, oh, you know, your parents are good parents. And they were punishing me on something that, not punishing me, but took something away from me. And they said, oh, I wish my parents did that. Because kids talk among each other. And I look back at that, and I'm grateful for that. And I'm grateful.
You know, that's funny you brought that up.
My parents did took those things away from me, even though they did in front of my friends. I had a sleepover, even though it was a Friday night. My dad still made me shut the TV off or shut the hearing aid. Go to bed.
Yeah.
You know, go to bed. My room.
The parent be the parent.
And I'm like, okay, but if I had a big sleepover, it was until 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning, and the TV had to be shut off. But I couldn't leave up all night.
It's funny, parents were not afraid to be parents back in the older days. But today, they're almost afraid to be parents.
What was that?
They're afraid of acting like the bad guy.
Yeah, and then I noticed too, the kids, the parents that weren't strict with their children, the children are adults now, they're afraid of their own children. And they don't come by and see them. They don't come by and talk to them. And it's a world is just changing so bad. And I think this book helped young people become good people. It's not just for the child, the teenager. It's for the parent. The parent needs to read this book as well. They learn these habits. And yeah, Stephen Covey. I met Stephen Covey, you know, because he's here in Utah, and that's where I'm at in Utah. And I had the opportunity to meet him and hear him speak and everything. He's wonderful. He would say you had to work really, really hard, but you got to play hard. So it's not just and it's not just having the kid go and do all these chores and da-da-da. But he's also giving him the opportunity to play really, really hard.
Yeah.
He thanks you. They'll thank you all the way around. Remember when we were growing up too, how we were on baseball teams and things like that. We went out and we played really, really hard. But we come back, and we had so had our chores and stuff. I remember I had
Was your extracurricular activities, right?
Yeah, I had to do my chores before I can go play or play hard.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I had to get up early just to do all my chores so I can go have the whole afternoon to go play, and it was good. And I remember my dad coming into my room because, you ready?
And it was good.
You ready to go?
And it was good.
And I was so thankful for that because he said, are you ready to go? Are you ready to go play? Are you ready to go do this and this with your friends? And I said, yes. And, but I was still a young teen. I wasn't driving or anything. But I just remember that. And I'm very grateful that I got up and did my chores and my parents were pleased and they let me go play. And I wasn't punished like kids today. You know, I wasn't punished because I did my chores, make sure I did everything I was supposed to do. And
two things about that, Kathy Lee. One, I'm just going to piggyback on something you said earlier. Like, I remember I had a buddy. Uh-huh. He was a wrestler at another high school. And I think it was like during Christmas. Uh-huh. We had like these special Christmas break, holiday break practices, and he came over and he was a good wrestler, good state wrestler in Connecticut. He came over and it was the old days, so the rules weren't as much, but he came over and he went to one of our practices. Uh-huh. And my wrestling coach was a really tough, hard driving man. Uh-huh. Some people will be like, oh my God, he's relentless, this guy. Right, he's mean. Well, not, but I'll never forget this wrestler. He placed in the States and all that. A buddy of mine from a different high school came over and he wrestled with us for a couple practices, a couple days. Well, and then after a couple days, he said to me, Dan, if I had had your wrestling coach my entire high school career, I wouldn't have placed in the States. I would have won the States.
Aww.
because my coach, he was telling me, he goes, my coach never pushed me like your coach did. He goes, if I had that in my life, somebody who just pushed me and pushed me, he goes, I would have been a state champ if I had that. Mm-hmm. And he goes, and I was thinking, wow, I guess I had no idea how lucky I was. <You know? laughs> I had no idea. I mean, I just remember looking at my coach and thinking, man, this guy's hard driving. This guy's brutal. This guy's relentless. But there was just something inside of me that loved that. You know, something inside me that did not rebel against that. Something inside of me just knew that was good and it felt right to me. And guess what? I was a two-time state champ, two-time junior Olympian wrestler from that. So that's the first part of, you know, you can be seen as that really, really tough guy. But, you know, go around, ask any winning program, ask the UConn women's basketball team if they have a problem with Gino being tough on them. And they're going to say, heck no, I love that man. I love that coach.
Daniel, I'm coming to a close, but I just want to tell everybody where they can buy your books and, you know, where can they reach you too?
Yes, well, I'm very easy to find. If they just put Dan Blanchard in Google, uh-huh. Dan Blanchard, author, speaker, Google me, I'll come up everywhere. You know, I'm on all the social media channels, you know, the Facebook, the LinkedIn, the Twitter, you name it, the YouTube. I'm all of them. You'll find me pretty much everywhere. I don't spend time on TikTok, though. Maybe someday I will. Amazon is where my books are. Uh-huh. Definitely go to Amazon, type in Dan Blanchard, Daniel Blanchard. You find me, type in Dan Blanchard, The Storm. Might as well start off with the first book. You'll find me there. I've got a website at granddaddysecrets.com. You'll find me there, a bunch of stuff there on leadership, a bunch of stuff on my books, a bunch of stuff on speaking. Oh, check out my TEDx talk. Just punch in Dan Blanchard, TEDx talk. You'll be able to find me on YouTube for that. So I'm all over the place. You won't have any trouble finding me.
Okay, what about if they type in, I help help the young people become good people. Can they find that book by typing that in to Amazon?
Yeah, they that should pop up. Granddaddy's Secrets or The Storm, Help Young People Become Good People or Help Young Men Become Good Men. Well, no, that should pop up.
Okay.
If anything, just type in Dan Blanchard, author, speaker, and I'm all over the place.
Okay, that's really, really good to know. And, well, anyway, thank you so much, Dan, for coming on my show. And
thank you for having me.
It's really been fun. And I think we're going to do really good. I want you to come back again because we can keep talking about this topic. And I think it's very
Absolutely.
Important topic because of the way the kids are.
And communication for our next show because of with their phones, kids are not communicating the way they should be.
Right. Well, once again, thank you so much, Dan, for coming on the show. And for those out there, please go to the Amazon store and go to his website. He's on Facebook, YouTube. I'll have everything there for you. So please go there and thank you so much for tuning in. Thank you, Dan. And he'll be back on my show again. So look for that as well. He'll be on it probably within the next 4 months, probably before school starts. Ooh, that's a good one. But anyway, good topic to talk about, especially with the phones and school. Okay, so thank you so much for tuning in for everybody. And have a great day. And until then, thank you so much for tuning in. Bye.